Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about what happens to your children if you don't make it home. One child in every nine children lose a parent before they're age 20. Without an emergency response plan, your child may be taken into protective custody or foster care, making an already traumatic event much, much worse. This is something that all families need to plan for. However, being divorced and your child having two homes can compound the problems with such an emergency. The good news is that with a little forethought and willingness to think about your own potential demise, you can make a world of difference to your child. Now, joining us today to guide us through this topic is someone who's passionate about getting the word out to parents about creating an emergency response plan. Her name is Martha Hartney. Martha is an estate planning attorney in Boulder, Colorado, and she's also the creator of CHIRP, the Children's Emergency Response Plan. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you, Mandy. I appreciate you having me on your show.
It's great. So yes. I'm glad you were able to join us. I wanted to start by just talking about what sort of situations are we talking about here? I kind of assume that it involves a parent dying suddenly, unexpectedly, such as in a car accident or having a massive heart attack. But could it also be a temporary situation where a parent misses a flight home, gets stranded overseas, is stuck somewhere because of a disastrous weather event?
Of course, yes. As a matter of fact, you know, death is only one of the, we call them the six Ds. There's disability, detention, delay, deportation, disaster, and death. So death isn't the only topic for which we need to plan. It's a bunch of other things as well. The things that might keep us away from our children unexpectedly, where we need to make sure that we have empowered people who are nearby our children to take legal custody of them in one of those emergencies.
So these emergencies, it doesn't have to be permanent. It could it also be like getting stuck somewhere, or could be hopefully a temporary situation. But I was also thinking about like a temporary incapacitation or like such as an emotional breakdown, or say that you're in a medically induced coma.
Certainly. We all think about death as the primary concern when we're talking about estate planning or legal planning. Oh, what happens if I die? Yes, that is the one that's right up front. It's not the only one. I've heard of people who've been, you know, delayed overseas in China and can't get back for a week, or who have been detained, particularly parents who are at risk of being deported. A children's emergency response plan is the kind of thing that can help make sure their children aren't lost in the shuffle or overlooked or fall through the cracks and are cared for by people that they pick.
Okay.
So let's say
that one of these events happen, and I think it's easier for us to really understand what goes on here if we talk about a specific example. But let's say there's a car accident, and say that I'm killed. What does that trigger with respect to my child?
Well, a lot of things, actually. So if you are, it depends on if you're married or divorced and
I'm
what
divorced.
Your child's custody situation is.
Let's say I'm divorced.
Okay. And then we have to find out, is the father in the picture or nearby?
Okay. So let's say, for the purposes of this, let's say I have shared parenting.
Okay. Shared parenting. Great. Well, if you are in a car accident and either disabled or die, and you are obviously on the side of the road, first responders will be working on you, of course, to stabilize you. That's their first job. For parents who have children who are small and they have a lot of the indicia of parenting, like car seats and stuff in the car, that will trigger a notice to those authorities, the police, sheriff, fire, rescue, you know, even a coroner will notice, oh, my goodness, there are children's things in this car. This is a parent. Therefore, we now need to secure the safety of that child. So the very business is for them to locate the child. Sometimes that can be tricky. Eventually, the authorities will figure out where a child is, and then they have to figure out where either the next of kin is or the legal guardian. So if you have minor kids in there at home, you know, the police will send a squad car out to that address with a uniformed officer, A, to give notice that you have died or are disabled, there's been an accident, and then to locate these children. Their next question to the person answering the door is, are you next of kin, or do you know where the legal guardians are? Because police are not allowed to leave children in the care of someone who isn't one of those two things, next of kin or a legal guardian. If they don't have one of those two people right on hand, they have to collect the children and take them to the police station.
We call that
protective custody.
Okay, so, I mean, what if the kids are in school? Do the police go to the school?
Yeah, they will go to the school. The school will look up who the emergency contacts are, and they'll make contact with the emergency contacts. So, but again, here's the nuance. If those emergency contacts aren't either authorized legal guardians with paperwork or next of kin, the police still can't leave them in their care.
Right.
Even
temporarily?
Even temporarily, yeah, because that's not next of kin or someone who's been authorized by you as a parent. So they won't necessarily leave a child with the neighbor or with the person who's listed on your emergency contacts. They will do their best to locate those people, but it could take hours or days even to find them and get them to your children, get them together with your children. So we don't want them to have to call Child Protective Services, place a child in foster care temporarily for a matter of hours or days. We don't want that. But
right.
There's a really easy solution. And,
okay.
And the solution is that we select the people who we will legally empower to take custody of our children, who can produce a legal document, show it to the police, and say, I am the legal guardian. I am either a temporary guardian or a permanent guardian, and I have authority to take these children so you don't have to take them to the police station or call Child Protective Services. I've got it. Thank you very much.
So, yes, that makes a lot of sense. But now if I'm separated, if I'm divorced, do I have to, and we have shared decision-making with my former spouse, so, but I'm thinking about what happens if I'm killed and I'm not there for my children. Do I have to get my former spouse to agree to these people who I want to designate as temporary guardians? I mean, are we not setting a stage for a custody battle here after my death?
Not really, no. So the first piece is when we do a children's emergency response plan for a divorced person or a divorced couple, the temporary guardianship will generally have the other parent as the first person to be contacted. So we're not bypassing their authority in any way. They're the first up, they're the custodial parent, the other one. Our children will always go to the other parent if they are in a shared custody situation. Both temporarily and permanently, period. So we're not bypassing a custody issue here. It just can't happen that way.
Okay.
Because both parties have constitutional rights to the children. So there's no way to undermine those constitutional rights short of a termination of parental responsibilities.
Okay.
So your former spouse or your child's other parent is always first up.
So it sounds like actually it would be a good idea even if you are divorced, if you could work jointly
mm-hmm.
on this sort of plan. I mean, that would be ideal world.
Sure. Yeah,
and then
a lot of couples,
you both know what the plan is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A lot of couples are actually including this in their separation agreement and their parenting plan now.
Huh.
I've seen a rising number of parents actually come to some agreement as to who the children's permanent guardian would be if both parents died. Obviously, the other parent is the custodial parent if one of them dies. But if both of them die, the parents can certainly agree in a parenting plan who a long-term guardian would be. Of course, if they wanted to change it, that makes it a little bit more difficult to change because you'd have to change a court order. But people are doing it, which is terrific. And at the same time, you don't have to come to an agreement, because each parent has individual rights to a child. If both parents decide independently to create a children's emergency response plan with a short-term guardian and a long-term guardian, really what we're concerned about is a long-term guardianship. If both parents pass away then, and there's two sets of documents, then in Colorado at least, and I'm pretty sure most states are like this, the last person who passes away is the first person whose document is used. So they can be different. They don't have to match. It's great if they can, and it's great if parents can communicate and collaborate on the selection of the long-term guardian, but it's not required.
But you don't end up with a situation that kind of like if I had shared parenting with my former spouse and I was to pass away, then whoever I designate as being my desired guardian kind of steps into my role as a shared parent. Do they become a co-parent with my former spouse then?
No, not at all. In fact, it doesn't work that way at all. Once one parent dies, 100% of parenting time, 100% of decision-making goes to the surviving parent. We can't actually nominate someone to step in our shoes and take our parenting time.
Okay.
It just doesn't work that way.
Okay.
Which actually highlights one of the reasons why people who are separating and divorcing really should, as part and parcel of the divorce, do an estate plan. To really wrap it up nicely, to make sure that our children are provided for properly, and that we express our desire that our children maintain contact with our side of the family, and then provide resources for that.
So with the children's emergency response plan, then, for a divorce situation, we're really talking about a temporary guardian rather than taking over. Parenting rights from the or sharing parenting with the other person?
Yes, we definitely need temporary guardians because our spouse may not be in town, they may not be available.
Well, then I was
thinking,
guardians, I mean,
even regardless,
even if the like the other parent lived in another state, then
very important,
because I've seen I would say they're not common, but I have worked with couples where one party is in another state and the other party is in the state with the children. The children actually go to the other parent during summer vacation and holidays, but the school year is spent here. So I think what you're saying,
then,
in this situation, then you'd have a temporary guardian that would step in, but the other parent would still be there, would then really be the sole legal guardian at that point. And then what happens to the children in terms of their schooling and where they spend their time is up to them.
Yes, that's exactly true. If there's shared parenting and decision-making, then really a temporary guardianship for a distant co-parent is very, very important. And we still want to do long-term guardianship nominations, even if there's another parent who's first up.
Right.
Because I have seen it. I have seen it 5 times in 7 years where two parents who were separated died one after the other from completely unrelated causes. So it can happen.
That's awful.
It's not common. It is awful. It's, it's a one in a million, pretty sure, but it does happen.
Yeah.
So just because there's another parent who's first up doesn't mean that we don't want to and can't. We can nominate long-term guardians for our kids after our child's other parent. We should still do it.
Right. Well, yeah. Martha, I have lots more questions for you, but I wanted just to take a short break, remind our listeners today that today we're talking about what happens to your children if you don't make it home. And joining me is Martha Hartney. Martha is an estate planning attorney based here in Boulder, Colorado. And she's also the creator of CHERP, CHERP. The Children's Emergency Response Plan. You can check that out on the internet at gochirp.com. Martha, could you share with our listeners what inspired you to create CHERP?
My own children, of course. when they're older now and they don't need a children's plan at all. But when they were young, I certainly had a concern about who would take care of my children short-term and long-term. Children's planning has been around for about 20 years, and there's only about 1,000 lawyers in the country, not very many, who understand the nuanced need for specific planning for children who are still at home. Among all of the, there's about 50,000 estate planners, so it's kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack for a lawyer who really understands these custodial issues. And I developed this system because, you know, I realized that every family, every parent, every child needs a plan in place. And there's never been a direct-to-consumer method to get this out to every family. So my team and my husband and I, 2 years ago, sat down and decided we were going to pull this off and bring a direct-to-consumer product that was available to all families in a somewhat, you know, in an inexpensive way that is easy to pull off, easy to do, without necessarily having to see a lawyer, although that is often recommended.
That was going to be my question is, you know, how easy is this for somebody to do on their own?
It's actually very easy. The most difficult part of it is making decisions about who are going to be the short-term guardians and who would raise our kids. The biggest barrier for families I have found is an inability to just make a decision on who the long-term guardian will be, because it's a crummy decision. No one wants to make it. No one wants to think about it. And no one is ever actually going to be 100% right. You know, even when there are good options, there's always something a little off that feels not right about it, aside from the fact that we wouldn't be able to do our own job as a parent. We wouldn't be here to raise our children, see them graduate from high school and get married and have kids of their own. All of that is so oppressive that people just, like, they put the decision off. It's not going to happen to me. It's not going to happen to me. And it does happen.
Right.
Happens remarkably more than I thought.
Right.
So,
so I have some more questions
that
I wanted to get back to, and talking about more situations in a divorce scenario, about what happens if you are killed or not able to get back to your child. What if your other parent has restricted parenting, such as only supervised visits because of, say, domestic violence or drug and alcohol abuse? Are you saying that they then become the sole guardian and decision maker in that situation?
Not necessarily, because they are already subject to a court. If they're having supervised visitation, there's an active court case going on, and that court will actually make decisions about that. And in fact, a restricted parenting time or supervised visitation situation where there's treatment happening, it's extra important that the sole parent, the custodial parent, do a children's emergency response plan.
Okay.
Because we need to have a court be able to affirm someone that we've pre-selected, which is our constitutional right to do, to serve as their child's guardian while this treatment is continuing.
Okay.
It's extra important.
Right. Yeah. Well, so that's a good point. So you're saying that every family needs to have a children's emergency response plan. And it's maybe a silly question, but needs to be in writing?
Oh, yes. That's the whole idea.
And
the system that we built, it is an in-writing system. It's where you can create legal documents, sign them, have them witnessed and notarized right online, and then have a kit delivered to your door that makes sure that your legal documents are in the right hands at the right time, and that police and authorities know who to call, have easy ways of notifying those people.
So how do you...
The whole system is...
Right. So what is, like... I mean, I'm thinking here, I remember our fire department came around a couple of years ago and gave us stickers to put on the window if there were pets inside the house.
Yeah.
And also something about, like, also something on the fridge about, like, what medications each person was taking, so that, you know, if there was an emergency, that information is available to them. Is that your Chirp product, does that do something similar to that? I'm just thinking, you know, how do you, if I could have this great plan, but it's no good if nobody knows about it.
Yeah, that's right. And nobody can find the documents or locate your guardians. Absolutely. That's what the whole system is geared to do. So we worked with, I've been doing this for 7 years. So I've been around the block a few times, and I've met with our local police, sheriff, DA, to discover what they need in order to make sure that our children are cared for by our chosen delegates. And so we've created this kit that includes window stickers for your house and your car that point police and paramedics rescue to the direction of your children's emergency response plan information, which should be in your glove box. It should be on your phone. We actually have a lock screen called a squawk screen that has it in case of emergency image on it. You can set as your lock screen so that they can easily see who to call in case of an emergency right at the phone. Then we have ID cards that go in your wallet that indicate that you have children and who the police or rescue should call.
Okay.
Right in the wallet. And then we give those documents to your short-term guardians so that they have them in hand to make sure that they show up with that paperwork to prove their authority to police and rescue or whoever's on hand with their kids. So it's a really well thought out system, and you know, we make sure that police have a quick way to identify who your children's local guardians are.
Okay, so that sounds like you've covered a lot of bases there. So we talked earlier about ideally you would talk to your ex about this, and you'd both be on the same page as this. But I think that a lot of people are not in that situation. Or if you did, what if your ex disagrees with your emergency response plan? Is that something that they can challenge in advance? Is a court going to look at it prior to the event happening that triggers it? Or are they is it just a matter of waiting until the plan is actually triggered and then, or let's reverse the tables. Let's say I disagree with my ex's plan. Do I have to wait until an event happens to be able to dispute it?
I would think so. I've never actually seen that scenario play out.
Okay.
In part because once a divorce or a parenting plan has been put in place, courts don't seem to pay a lot of attention to this particular thing. Temporary guardianships, I think if a person objected, a parent objected to it, they would have to show that the child was going to be in harm's way in some way by that nomination. That's a pretty high standard. I mean, they'd have to prove that the person is abusive or has a, you know, alcohol or drug problem that's untreated. And, you know, that's a pretty big argument to have over something that's still theoretical. So I don't know that necessarily that a court would hear it, for one, because it's not even an active power. And then if they did choose to, it would be such a high bar that I can't imagine that a parent would even make such a nomination of someone who is dangerous. I just haven't heard of that.
Okay.
Could be wrong.
But it could, right. But it could be a possibility. But it sounds like you're saying and that's where I was thinking too. A court, you wouldn't be able to challenge it until it became a reality. Because
I don't think so. You know, just because somebody doesn't like somebody else, you know, like if one ex spouse doesn't like their former spouse's new mate.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're gonna have to show something more than dislike.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got about three or four more minutes, Martha. So I have another topic I wanted to talk to you about in that time. And that is this something you should discuss with your child? Like maybe age appropriately? Again, it could cause conflict. Like, you know, I could imagine like my child saying to me, "Mom, I'm, you know, I'm so scared of, you know, what if something happens to you? What am I going to do?" Mm-hmm. That you'd want to reassure them, but then that could backfire because the child could then go to their other parent and says, "Mom says if anything happens to her, I'm going to live with grandmother."
Well, again, if in that particular scenario, if a child has this fear, you know, we definitely have to meet it in an age-appropriate manner. I will tell you that a court is required to confer with a child who is over 12 about a placement if it's not with one of the natural parents.
Okay.
They won't place a child without their consent. So at that age, we should actually begin to have the conversation that it's possible mom and or dad could die too early. And what would you want to have happen? Where would you want to live? Who would you want to be loved by? Who would you want to be cared for by? In an age-appropriate way, definitely by that time. But before then, the scenario that you mentioned that, you know, a child could go and say something to the other parent and stir up the pot. Again, if the other parent is involved, that parent is going to be the custodial parent, which should be our answer to our child. Hey, right. If something happens to me, you're going to live with dad.
Right.
Dad loves you, you know, and dad will take excellent care of you, and I'll make sure of that, and so will he, and you don't have to worry about that. And then the question might arise, like, what happens to dad? Well, you know what, dad and I will talk about it. We'll have a conversation about it. And hopefully come to give you an answer.
I'm just thinking, you know, that a child might express that concern after hearing a story on the news, you know, you know, it would be easy. It's not something. And again, most of us aren't going to want to initiate that conversation because it's a hard, difficult, painful conversation to have.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And it's a good idea for us to get to kind of cozy up to the idea, get a little more at ease around the idea of us dying, because it's real and it happens, and it happens to every one of us. I can guarantee it eventually.
Yeah.
So start now. There's no better time like the present than to get a little bit more attuned to the reality of death and allow that to be a companion rather than like a ghoul or something that haunts us.
So then you can by doing that and talking to your child about it, you can actually help them feel more at peace and ease that they're not going to be left alone, or that they will be cared for because you've thought through the possibilities.
Right. It takes a lot of courage. Which is why so few parents actually do any planning at all. I think it's something like 23% of parents take care of their estate planning. Most of those aren't doing children's planning quite sufficiently enough. But it's abysmally small, and it should be fixed. So a lot of children who are orphaned end up in legal proceedings that could be avoided if parents just sat down and did it, just had the courage to face it and to make a decision to do it.
So Martha, we're almost out of time here. So I'm thinking that that's a great way to wrap this conversation up, is just like, you know, you have to do this. You have to get your head out the sand and face it. But do you have one more tip for our listeners?
Let's see. I got lots of tips.
Choose your favorite one.
Okay, so doing a children's emergency response plan is the primary driver when I work with families whose children are still at home, which is most of my clientele. It's I need to protect my children. I need to make sure they're cared for by the right person at the right time, and then I need to provide for that person in a good way. That's what estate planning does. So children's planning is the first step, but it's not the last step. It's also our job to provide for our guardians, to make sure that they're resourced to do the job, so that they don't have to dig into their own pockets, or they don't have to face having to foot the bill. And that's estate planning is really an important process, an important project, especially for a new family.
Yeah. Right.
Because as soon as we have a child, we have the need. Now get in the groove of doing it and keeping it up to date, just like you would a financial plan, just like you would any other personal business. You just do it and you keep it up to date and you take good care of it.
So thank you, Martha. Listeners, that's great advice from Martha. I really encourage you to take heed of that advice. My guest today was Martha Hartney. Martha is an estate planning attorney in Boulder, Colorado, and she's the creator of CHERP, C-H-E-R-P, the Children's Emergency Response Plan. Please do check out her website, gochirp.com, and look at the resources on there. There's lots more to support the conversation we've been having this morning. I know how difficult it is to think about not being around for your kids. Even if you do start to think about the what ifs or what might happen to you, I know I tend to shudder and then push it out of my mind. I just don't want to go there. It's just too sad. But please, please don't do that. Don't push it away. You're going to have more peace of mind knowing that you've done everything you can to take care of your child, even if you can't be the one who's doing it. So what I'd like you to do now is to make this one of your top priorities for the coming month. Make a commitment to yourself that you will follow through and create your own children's emergency response plan and within the next 30 days. Don't put this off. Do it. I want to thank you for listening. Remember, please check out my blog at sincemydivorce.com, and I will have a synopsis of this podcast posted there if you'd like to go back and read it. And I hope you'll join us again next time for more conversations about divorce. I'm Mandy Walker.